Welcome to this week's podcast of Breakthrough Church from Bayswater in Melbourne, Australia. For more details and further resources, visit breakthrough.org.au. We hope you enjoy today's message.
So you can go back and listen to the last few weeks where we've been talking about this topic of covenant. So covenant is not something that people are very familiar with today. It is something, though, which was not just a Bible thing. It's through a lot of cultures. A covenant is a joining together in a very official capacity of two people. And in English, often we have a struggle to know what to call that because we don't have a lot of these ceremonies and going on called covenant. So sometimes people would say it's like a contract. You know, if you're going to go into agreement to buy a car or something like that and you sign a contract, and they say a covenant's like a contract. Well, it's sort of like a contract because sometimes business is done and things are traded and things under a covenant, but a contract is just a minor part and not really reflective of a covenant. Or there's another phrase, in the English, this is an English word, suzerainty. I think there's an N in there, or suzerainty. And how many are familiar with that word? Good, I can pronounce it however I like and no one will know. Or maybe you are familiar with it and you just can't recognize it from what I'm saying. Suzerainty is, it's actually a legal term. It talks about how nations would connect with each other and make an agreement. Before we have our current system, we have law in Australia, but what do you do when you have a country in a country? Who runs the law? And so we have world organizations and world, over time, countries have learnt to deal with other countries. And they used to do this through a thing called suzerainties, which was like official pacts between two nations. Normally, a stronger nation would form a suzerainty with a weaker nation. And they would say, we won't attack you, we will look after you, and all you got to do is give us a lot of money every year, or every month, or every day. You know, that sort of, that's those little minor details. So they were sort of agreements between nations, but that's developed now, and we have international law and all sorts of things. And so covenants to say, well, they're like suzerainties, that's what they were. Yes and no, they were. That was a type of covenant. But covenants were very different to that too, because covenants also were very personal. They're not just contracts. If you go in to buy a car, and if you bought a car, let's say, who bought a car and had to sign some papers for that, and it was an official. Put up your hand if you've done that. Put up your hand if you've done it over 2 years ago. You've done that. All right, can you put up your hand if you did it over 2 years ago, and keep your hand up if you remember the name of the person who signed the contract on the car company. Anyone remember their name? So that's different to covenant. See, if you can't remember their name, you're not in covenant. Covenant's like, who got married over 2 years ago? Who still remembers the name of the person that you got married to? Yeah, all right. Marriage is a covenant, all right? And it's more, people say, it's a contract. Some people say, only a piece of paper. No, it's a covenant. And the reason you remember their name is it's more than a contract. It's a relationship, all right? So you might not remember. So that's why contracts, suzerainties, they're sort of types of covenant, but they don't represent it fully. They certainly don't bring out the personal connection. And they don't bring out the fact that the two become so blended. I read some stories of Stanley. I was going to say Andy Stanley, but he's a preacher in America, so he didn't go through the jungles of Africa and discover Congo. So Henry Stanley was the one that found Livingston. Dr. Livingston, I presume, is the famous words that he was supposed to have said. And as all good things, no one's actually sure whether he said it, but it's a good story. But he said he did find Dr. Livingston, and he did go through the jungles in the Congo for years searching for him and found him. And Dr. Livingston was like, here in the middle of the jungle, I was not expecting someone to come and find me. And he was it was a good thing he did, because they were very low on their resources and things like that. But Henry Stanley, in his travels, discovered he had to make covenants with tribal chiefs over and over again, because in order to deal with them, he had to have a covenant. All right, that was the way they understood things. So there was many times, and I'll just read one. I might have read this one in the past, but it just gives you a feel for the sort of things he did. So he was requested to seal our friendship. So this is from Henry Stanley's actual accounts, which he published in the newspaper. He said, "I was requested to seal our friendship by performing the ceremony of blood brotherhood between Mirambo, the chief, not Rambo, Mirambo, the chief, and myself. Having caused us to sit fronting each other on a straw carpet, he made an incision in each of our right legs, from which he extracted blood, and interchanging it, he exclaimed aloud, 'If either of you break this brotherhood now established between you, may the lion devour him, the serpent poison him, bitterness be found in his food, his friends desert him, his gun bursts in his hands and wound him, and everything that is bad do wrong to him until death.'" Yeah, so they're pretty serious about it. And he said, "The same blood now flowed in the veins of both Stanley and Mirambo. They were friends and brothers in a sacred covenant, life for life. They exchanged gifts. They showed how unselfish they were to each other. So what it did was meant that he was now a blood brother with a chief of the African tribe there. So anything, and they this is how they understood. They actually understood that my blood and his blood are shared. So if you do something to Stanley, you're actually doing something to me. If you do something to me, you're doing it to Stanley. So none of the tribe could attack Stanley because that would be like attacking the chief. And if one of the other tribes around attacked Stanley, they would look after Stanley while he's with them because he was one of them. So they actually saw it very much as the two. And it wasn't just while they were there. Many years later, he would travel back and he would still have a covenant relationship. In fact, with one of the chiefs who I read a few weeks ago, the chief went on to become a great man and ruled over a large region. So when he made covenant with him, he was only a small chief of a small area. And by the time Stanley came back a few years later, this guy had grown and he was now the chief of the whole area. And then there were some disputes and problems because of what Stanley and things were happening with the African people. And Stanley went to him and said, "Do you want to break the blood? Do you want to break the covenant? It's causing you a lot of trouble that you are now connected with me in this dispute." And he said, no, we can't. That's not how it works." He said, "We are covenant brothers. We will work through this." And so it was taken as something very solemn that was not just something you ever did lightly. And he did it, I think, what did I say, 40 or 50 times. Over the period of his travels, he entered into blood covenant with different tribes because that was the only way he could do. Some of them were cannibals, some of them were headhunters. And so the reason he's got his head on his shoulders is because he made covenant with the right people, because you can't eat your brother. Well, you can, but it's not. As Graham said of the cannibal, past his mate in the jungle. Think about it and you'll work that out. That's not a very good thing for a cannibal to do. So, give it time. Okay, now, we went through a couple of weeks ago the process. There's a process of covenant where people, they exchange belts, they exchange garments, they exchange vows. And like in that one, there was the vow, that African covenant was, may your gun explode in your hand and wound you. Everything they could think of was like, it's going to go bad for you. And so there's vows that are made, there's promises that are made, and we'll talk about those vows and promises that God has given us. But I want you to turn with me to 2 Samuel. Actually, it might be 1 Samuel. So, chapter 18. And let's read. We went through this process of a covenant a couple of weeks ago. One of the things that they did in 1 Samuel 18, verse 3, says, "Jonathan made a covenant with David," all right? I won't go into all the details. You can, as soon as Madeline's got those podcasts up, you can listen to this in a lot more detail than this. "Because he loved him as himself." That's covenants were not just legal contracts. They were an expression often of total love and commitment to the other person. "And Jonathan stripped himself of the royal robe that was on him, and he gave it to David." So he took his coat off and he gave it to David. And it was very symbolic. He was saying, "What I am, you are," and there was a covenant connection. And there's a part of a covenant which requires exchange. All right, turn to the person next to you and say, "Exchange, exchange." Now we're gonna do a bit of illustration here, but before I do, I'm going to give a gift to everybody here, which I want to keep for the rest of this message, and it's a rock. or a little stone, all right? So maybe, Phil, can you be the rock passer outer? Yeah, new role in Breakthrough, the rock passer outer. And but I want you to think about this with covenant. Covenant requires exchange. The word is exchange. It's very important to understand that part of the covenant process is this exchange. This I take something and I give it to you, you do something, give it to me. You exchange vows, you exchange blood, you exchange. It's a giving one to the other. While you're thinking that, I want to read to you from Isaiah chapter 61. Because why did they exchange garments and coats? And now, actually, while I'm reading this, I want someone for an illustration. Who's looks like they haven't been paying a lot of attention so that I can... No, I need a guy. I need a guy because I've got to put on my motorbike gear eventually. All right, so someone who could sort of be about, not too big because it's my motorbike gear, but not too little, but I guess it's... All right, what about Nadia? Nadia, come on out the front. Yay. Yeah, give Nadia a hand. Come on. Nadia's like, I'm thrilled. All right, these are rocks, not chocolates. Please don't try and eat them. All right, that looks like a bowl of chips being passed around. All right, the first thing I want you to do is I want you to put on your garment because everybody in life has a coat on in this, in a covenant. All right, because covenants... Yeah, he looks pretty good. Yeah, that's a nice looking. So yeah, so when Nadir is entering the covenant, his coat becomes really important because that represents him. It's who he is. It's what he is. His status in life. You know, if you're a tribal chieftain, there might be some markings and some decorations on your coat which represented who you were. And so, if you exchange that to me, wow! It's like I become you. And I take off what I do in exchange to you. So coats in the Bible became representative of a person. And so last week, or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about a number of scriptures that talked about take off the old person and put on the new person. It's talked as if it's a garment. And here in Isaiah 61, it talks about some of the things that God wants to do to people that are in difficulty and struggling. And in verse 3, it says, to grant to those that are mourning, that are upset in Zion, I want to give them... And, you know, think of Jordan's, Jay's testimony this morning. He came, and there was a garment of heaviness that was on him. A feeling of, it's just not working, and what he shared in his testimony. And it says, so God wants you to come in, and he says, I want to take, and he says, give them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise. Mantle means a coat, the coat of praise instead of a spirit of fainting. So do you see there's three exchanges? Giving them a garland instead of ashes, oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a spirit of fainting. All those are instead of, not on top of. All right? So I want you to think, see if you can get this. Instead of, not on top of. Turn to the person next to you and say, I've got this. It's instead of, not on top of. But let's just see what the difference is, because who would like to help Nadia try some different clothes on? Who have we got? Sorry? Hopefully not a girl. I'm gonna ask Sandy. Come on, Sandy, come and help. Sandy, come and choose. There are a range of clothes on this bench, all right? Sandy, and I want you to choose some stuff. Now, on this side, there's a range of things which are called on top of. So if I was going to give you something, and I say, okay, Nadia, I want to give you a hat. He doesn't have to do anything with this hat except put it on. All right? It's you don't have to take something off in order to take this. It's an on top of. It's a benefit to you. I give you something. So pick some things there that you can give to Nadia that he can wear on top of. They're called, in fashion, they're called accessories. Yeah, well, you can actually now, because you put something on, you have to take that one off. Put that one on. Yeah, you're right into this, Sandy. Go and choose some. In the fashion world, they're called accessories, aren't they? They're not the quick course. Fix it, go, keep going. There's like quite a few things there. All right, now, they're extras. They're bonuses. They're things that you can take on top of what you already have. I'm going to read to you from...
some gloves.
All right, so in 2 Peter chapter 1, I want to read this to you, that it says, now for this very reason, this is 2 Peter 1 verse 5, for this very reason, applying every diligence, and I'm going to read from one translation, it says, add to your faith moral excellence, and add to your moral excellence knowledge, and to your knowledge add self-control, and to your self-control add perseverance, and to your perseverance add godliness, and godliness, brother, these are things that you don't have to take off in order to put on. You know, you can be kind and faithful at the same time, and there's things that God there's things that can be added to you, and they just keep going. Like, if you're cold, what could we add? A scarf. Not that one. Yeah, that one. That's a good scarf. You can add. Christine suddenly realizes, that's my scarf. She might not have been asked whether I could bring that this morning. I just got that late last night. Okay, you can switch hats. He's cold, all right? So now he's going to put on the Chariots of Light beanie. That's pretty cool. And if you're going swimming underwater, you might want to put on goggles, or if you're going to the ski, you got or the sun. So there are things that you add. And some of them you could even add double ones on, like if you've got a scarf, there's nothing to stop you having two scarves. All right, you can add. There are things that you can add to your life, and God wants to add to and keep building on you and add to you. And when we come to covenant with God, some of the things He gives us just keep growing. He works in our life, and then He gives us this, and then we get protection, and then we get provision, and then He works in our heart and gives us the spirit of joy, and he just adds and adds and adds and adds. Covenant does involve one person adding to the other. All right, but how many remember what we said was, there's in covenant, what's important is not just adding, but is exchange. It's got to be instead of something. You know, there's got to be an exchange. He gave me the garment of praise instead of the spirit of heaviness. Now, if I wanted to set, wow, you're looking really good there. If I wanted to set you up to be me as a bikey, so this is my jacket, which actually comes with a vest. It's got my name on it, my status and everything like that. If I said this is going to be your status, and you know, part of this is it says area leader and chaplain. That's the one I was looking for. Chaplain. I'm saying you're going to be a chaplain, so I'm going to give you this, and you can't just put no one. You can't just go and buy that and put it on. Does it make sense? Not the cost of it. Not everyone can. I don't. You know, you think, oh, it's not very expensive. Well, no. No one can buy it. It's actually got to be given to you, and in part of your role. So if I said I'm going to come make you a work on my motorbike. Now I could do this. I'm not going to make you do this. These are called wet weather trousers. These are not instead of, praise God. These are on top of. All right. Otherwise, that'd be really awkward, wouldn't it? These are not instead of, because you wouldn't wear these as your only trousers when you're riding, because the ones that I wear have got Kevlar patches in them and things like that. So if you come off, you can slide along and it won't actually rip the things. But these wouldn't last a moment. These are wet weather. You put them on top of. So that's something on top of. This one is, if it's really cold, but sometimes when you're riding a bike, it gets pretty cold. You can wear that over your head. I won't make you do that. That's really good. This one's, I got this, John Poole bought me this one. This is one of the best things. It's called a neck warmer. You might not think a neck warmer is important, but when you're riding a motorbike, to have that on, that area there can get so cold in certain weather, things like that. And of course, you've got to add on the helmet. But this one's not an add-on. This one's an instead of. All right? This one doesn't go over the top of your coat. This is instead of your coat. Because how many remember, you're wearing a coat and it might have a patch on it already for something else and what you're doing. And so you've got to do this. So this is an instead of process. All right? So when it comes in covenant, the problem that a lot of people get into is when they think that everything in a covenant is add-on, and don't realize that at the core, it's an instead of. You can't enter into a covenant and do this. If we tried to make this an add-on, let's try and do this. Let's do this as an add-on. So what I'm going to do is I want you to put one arm in one and keep one arm in that sleeve, all right? So we might save and rescue you from Sandy's decoration. Sandy, give Sandy a big hand. You're going to be... Even we'll take those off so you can see everybody... Again. All right, let's try it. I didn't take the gloves off. All right. So let's do this. instead of, so just one arm. So you got it. Let's see if we can make this. That's, so if you try and treat covenant as an add-on, it's just not going to work. Okay, it doesn't blend. Like like that hospital gown that never does up properly at the right. Yeah, it's not how it works. It doesn't function properly. If you come into a covenant and you work on the basis that I can add everything on that God has provided without realizing that there at one point, the key point is an exchange, it won't fit. The covenant won't work. Okay, the covenant's got to be a total, you give me your coat and I take, and you take my coat. How does this work with God? We don't have physical things. Obviously, we're not talking about physical. We're talking about our lives. The key for this is there's an important part in this is because when Jesus went to the cross, he wasn't going with his own coat on representing himself. Because he didn't need to die on the cross. Galatians says that when Paul said that only sinners end up on a cross. What was Jesus doing there? What was Jesus doing on a cross? Well, it was a planned, on purpose action that God arranged, even though that man did it, but God intended it for it to happen. It was his plan all along, that he would go up onto the cross, and by faith, Jesus would do something. He would, if you give me your coat, he would reach forward and he would see Nadia 2,000 years later and say, "Hey God, pretend I'm the deer." Not pretend, in the sense, let's make believe. Actually, let's do this as covenant. I'm now the deer. Look at all the things that Nadir has done and his life and the sinner he is. And I'm not just saying, oh, it's Nadir, so he's a sinner. We're all sinners. And he says, God, I want you now to deal with me in that sin. I want you to put that sin on me and I will absorb the punishment from that. So the problem is, if we see it as an add-on, it means we try and keep hold of our identity, and that's a sinful identity. You can't hold on to that because you can't deal with that. So the exchange must, it's not just that you need my coat, but you need to release your coat. You need to give up your identity and say, okay, I'm going to become what this says I am. All right, so let's make it official. So I'll take that. So I'm now going to become the deer. Yeah, this is. All right, and now, effectively, even that says Peter, chaplain, that could say Son of God, righteous. He's got the status and the righteousness that God has provided to Jesus, and he's given it to you. And now that's yours. But you can't get that properly if you try a add-on approach. You know, God, I'll try this and I'll give it a try. I'll try adding your goodness, but I just want to, I've got to keep hold of me and who I am. I want you to turn with me to a reference in the book of Jeremiah. Hallelujah. Try and find my glasses. It might be. There we go. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Phil. I wouldn't have gone there. Jeremiah chapter 32. Nidhi, you can just take a seat there for a moment. Don't go too far away, but Jeremiah 32. Jeremiah 32, verse 40. God is already speaking. I can't go into all the background of this and how God made a covenant with the people of Israel, but it was a covenant that had a time, it was going to elapse. It was only a covenant for a certain time. What he was waiting for was the covenant that he would make with Jesus, which would deal with the hearts and the lives of people and be the final full covenant. So So he gave a covenant to Israel, which was a shadow company covenant just for the moment, but eventually the real covenant was coming. But he began to speak about this covenant. He began to tell them what it would be like. He began to talk about the things that were as part of it. He talked about it, the eternal covenant. And he says in verse 40, I will make an everlasting covenant with them. And I will not turn away from them, not to do them good. I will put the fear of me in their heart so they will not turn away from me. And he said, I will take delight in doing good to them. This is God speaking. I will find great pleasure in putting on you everything I can that is good and happy and healthy. I want to make your life blessed. He said, I will find great delight in freeing you from sickness, in making provision for you and protecting you and working in your heart and not just giving you physical things. How many know that material things, they don't give real pleasure? I want to do it from the inside out. I want to make you really happy. I want to make you satisfied and peaceful. I want to give you joy that the world can't even understand. He says, I want to do all that. And he says, I will have great delight over them. This is Jeremiah 32:41, in doing good, and I will faithfully plant them in this land, in this place. And he says, and I'll do it with all my heart and all my soul. In other words, when God says, when I enter into this covenant, when I connect with you, I'm not going to hold anything back. I'm not going to do it half-hearted. I'm not going to say, let's try one sleeve each. Let's do a little bit. So I'm going to go in it with everything that's in me. God said, when I come to you, I'm not going to hold anything back. And if we turn to the book of Romans, chapter 8, I can still remember the time I was reading through my Bible. I was actually reading in the... I think the Living Bible, because I can remember where I was, and I would have been, this would have been 30 years ago. I was sitting outside on the veranda of our old church building. I can still remember the day I read this, and it went off in my heart like, wow. You know, read it two or three times, like, did I just read that? Did I just read what I think I read? Did it really happen? According to what to what you're saying about me. So Romans chapter 8 says, verse 31. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? Then it says this. He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? And what it's saying is, God said, I gave you Jesus. If I was going to hold back anything from you, I would have held back Jesus. If I've given you Jesus, are you saying that I would hold something back? I've given you the biggest, closest thing to my heart. I have done this wholeheartedly, totally, whole body. I've given you Jesus to come and die for you. If God could work out any other way, he would have done it. The fact that he gave us Jesus says, I have done this wholeheartedly. I have given without any holding back. No strings, no little clauses, none of that fine print. It's, I've given you my all. That's God to us. That's God to us. He said, I've given you wholeheartedly everything. I just want to make, everything I'm doing for you is in order to connect with you. What's my briefcase? I think it's under here. Yeah. Just want to read to you something that I read a few weeks ago. This is by a man called Andrew Murray. He lived 100 years ago, wrote some amazing things. And he wrote this. In entering into covenant with us, God's one object is to draw us to himself. to render us entirely dependent upon himself. Now, some people think, oh, he just wants me. He wants me to totally surrender to him. What's he after? Oh, this God, he wants everything. This is it. This is a trap, isn't it? He wants my coat. This whole covenant thing's a trap, isn't it? He wants me to give up myself. Every bit. Well, people take it a couple of approaches. First of all, they say, I'll just keep a sleeve. Because I know what this God is like. If I give him everything, I'm left exposed. I so loved what Andrew Stone shared last week when he talked about when Moses was summoned to the presence of God. He saw a burning bush and he said, take off your sandals and come bare feet. That to a person in the desert, you are putting yourself at a great disadvantage going barefoot. There's dangerous things, there's sharp rocks, there's heat. You're sort of now, and as I realized, you're also removing your place of escape, because if without the sandals, you can't run away. Because, you know, everyone's seen, you know, even big strong men without proper shoes look like wusses in a desert. And it goes, so if you're going to come here, I want you to become totally vulnerable. And so people are like, so this covenant thing, you're trying to get my coat. You're trying to get my life. Well, I'm too smart for God. I'm going to keep a sleeve. I'll look after this part. You know, there's part of my life that says you can touch anything, you can add on anything you want, but don't go into the bedroom. Don't go into my special set of memories. Don't go into my inner place. That's mine. God, you're out. You can rearrange the family room, but don't come into my inner place. And God's like, It's not a one-armed operation. You've got to come in, and I've got to have it all. So people think, see, he's just trying to get my life. He's trying to get me. This is what this covenant's all about. He's trying to get my life. And God says, yes, I am trying to get your life. I am trying to get you to give me everything. This is what it's all about. This is the purpose of it. He said, I want you to be so, but he said, covenant enables you to realize what I'm offering and who I am so that you can trust me in order to give me everything. He says, to render entirely dependent upon himself, so to bring us into the right position and disposition in which he can fill us with himself. He wants us to give him everything so he can pour everything into us. He wants to get... The only way I can get my coat onto you, says God, is if you get your coat onto me. But it's got to be everything. It doesn't work. It's not a, you know, I said we have this half a coat sort of thing. Well, it doesn't even work like that. It just falls apart. This doesn't make any sense. God is not good at sharing. He's loving, he's kind, but he's not a sharer. It's one thing we've got to realize. We teach our kids. It's one of the strangest things that I teach my kids. Don't be jealous. Don't, you know, share. And God says, I am jealous and I do not share. And like, it's the one aspect about God that it's like, what? That's the very thing I tell my kids not to do. And you just get out there, I'm a jealous God. Shh, God. You're a loving God. He said, I'm very jealous. Shh, don't say that. I tell my kids not to. You know, one of my kids said, I'm just like God, very jealous. No, it's different. You can't be like God and be jealous, because God is giving and kind. And so how does it work? Because God understands that if you try and blend him with anything else, it is disaster for you. He says, I am not a God that shares. I was talking to a couple this week, and we're talking about a story. There's a story in the Bible, and so, you know, not a parable. It's actually, it really happened to the children of Israel. They had a special box, I think it was called the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid with gold. It was special. And that they put some very holy things in there, and it had two big angels on top molded, and it was a glorious object, and they kept it in the very most sacred place of the temple, and it represented where God was. Where that ark was where God was. And so the children of Israel, really, they went through a period where they didn't care much about God, and they left the temple, and it's, you know, and its rites and everything God had told them to do, and they didn't care, and they were serving other gods, and they'd be worshipping Baal and worshipping Asherim and all sorts of things. But then they got into battle, and they were being defeated by the Philistines. was telling these people this week, and I said, the Palestinians. I said, no, it's a little bit too more modern. The Philistines. They were defeated by the Philistines, and they had this brilliant idea. We're in trouble. Let's bring God into the battle. So let's go get the ark, carry it into the battle, and then we've got to win if we bring the ark in. And God's like, well, I never told you to do that. All the best with that idea. You know, sometimes we do amazing things, and God gives us the all the best with that. I'll see you when you've tried that, and I'll be back here. All right, so that was like, oh, we'll do that. That's a really good idea, and they brought him in there. And guess what? They got defeated, and the ark got captured. So now they were not only defeated, they didn't even have the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant. So the Philistines have now got the Ark of the Covenant, which represents God and his presence, the glorious of God. God, there's no idols for God. There's no, but this was the closest thing to God's representation in that time. And the Philistines have now got the Ark. What do they do with it? They said, well, it's the Israeli sort of God thing. We'll put it in the temple with Dagon, our God. So they had a statue of Dagon. It was like a fish god. Imagine a big fish thing with a head and it's standing there. And they put the Ark of the Covenant in the temple next to Dagon. Now, what do we know? God does not do sharing. All right? There's other religions where you can have all the idols sitting on a shelf. You can have your idol for this and your idol for that and your idol for that and your god for this. You know, God doesn't do one arm on the shelf with the others. You come in the morning, where's all the other idols? They're on the ground. Who knocked them off the shelf? And God's like. So they come in to their temple, and Dagon is lying on the ground. And they're like. And you always know it's when you've got to help your God stand up, you're in trouble. All right? When your God says, oh, my God's fallen over, I better pick him back up. That should make, hang on a sec. If my God can't get up by himself, why am I worshiping him? The book of Isaiah said, you know, idolatry is just amazingly brilliant. You get a man who thinks, what should it look like? He goes into the forest, selects a piece of tree trunk, takes it back, imagines what it would look like, begins to carve it, covers it with gold, and he's done all this. He sits it on the thing and says, my God. He said, you did all the work. You put it on a pedestal, and then you say, my God. He said, that's the dumbest thing ever. If your God can't even look after himself and make himself, why worship him? So God makes Dagon. So they stand Dagon up and say, that was weird. The next day they come back in. Dagon's fallen over and his head has been chopped off and his arms are chopped off. Now they're a little bit scared. That's a big idol and the ark's like, just me, the only real God in this room. So then they're like, we don't want this thing here. That's the dumbest thing. They said, let's get rid of the ark so we can stand up our God and glue his arm and head back on. Because this thing's dangerous. So that's the thing about real gods. They're dangerous. So they put it on a cart and they said, maybe we're just imagining all this. Because at the same time as this, we're getting all sick and everything's going wrong in our village. And so they said, we'll try something. They get a cow that's got a baby calf. And this cow won't leave the calf because that's the mothering is strong, and they say they put the cow and hook it up to the cart, and they put the calf over there, and they point the road to Israel there, and the cow just walks all the way back to Israel, leaves the calf, heads away, and they go, okay, that was God. And so then the Israelites are out in the field, and they see this cart coming along, and there's the Ark of the Covenant. And so the Philistines like, all yours. We can't handle it. God's like that. He doesn't do sharing very well. Doesn't do it at all. Not because he's like, I want you all to myself because I'm nasty and selfish and controlling. He says, no, the only way I can pour all my goodness into you. You think I'm going to do something nasty to you when I didn't hold back Jesus? Seriously, if you think you're going to hand your life over to God and he's going to do something that's not to your benefit with your life, you've got to realize, he gave up Jesus for this moment. He's not going to hold anything back. He's not going to restrict anything from you. He's not going to hold back, but he does need us to make the exchange to allow, we can't do this and not do that. Give Nadia a big hand. You can take that off. That's probably very hot up here. It's great for riding in outdoor conditions on a motorbike, but not so great sitting in a warm area. When you came in, when I started this message, I gave you all something. I gave you a little rock. Because I wanted to give you something that could represent you. So this plain, uninteresting, small rock, I wanted to represent you. Because I wanted you to have something to take away from this. But then as we sing, in a little while, we're going to sing. But then I'm going to give you an opportunity to say, you know what? What do I do with me? I could take this home in my pocket, and that's how my life is. I keep me, and I look after me. And you know what? I've been hurt by this person. I've been abused by this person. I've been double-crossed by this person. I've learned the only one who looks after me is me. You know, one of the big phrases now for mums. Mums, you need you time. You need to look after you. No one else is going to look after you. This little, you know, 9-month screaming, crying, nappy filling thing is not looking after you. You got to look after you. You got to look after you. You know, people say, you know, you got to take care of you. Now I understand. Yeah, we're responsible for us. I'm not responsible for anyone else, but I'm going to stand before God one day and explain what I did with me. Yeah, I'm responsible for me. But some people have been so hurt and damaged, they hold me very close. And so when God comes along and says about this covenant and about this exchange, it's like, God, you don't realize, God, I've been hurt. I would rather go with me secure than have to release and take you, and there's a bit of uncertainty there. Because, you know, trusting is a process of losing control. But you've got to trust the person you're losing control to. I would never, ever, ever tell you to put your trust in me like I'm asking you to put your trust in God. You know, people put trust in people, and you end up with the Jonestown and Kool-Aid, and it gets weird when people put their trust in people. Because no one is worthy of that level of trust. We make friendships and we make loyalty. We understand all that. But ultimately, I never ask you to make that sort of level of commitment, because I'm not worthy of it. But I tell you this, God is. I cannot tell to anybody that I have more confidence in that if you put your life in His hands, He will treat it with absolute care and has the best for you. It will be painful when He cleans you up and works with you. It doesn't. You've got to learn that process. You've got to learn not to think like the old person. You've got to learn how to think like God sees you. There's a whole lot of things that you've got to do, and there's a journey there. But I tell you what, there's no one else that will take better care of you in that journey than God. I have 100% confidence in Jesus to do that. With all my kids, I have 100% confidence to tell them, kids, trust in Jesus more than you trust in me. Actually, develop a relationship with Him, follow Him. There is no one who has your better... I think I have your best interests. He has it even better. No one is more committed to you than He is. That's who He is. And you know what? This process of handing over your care, of giving your life to Him, it's a major thing. Jesus spoke of it in one time in a parable. He said, you know what it's like? He says, it's like a man. This is what the kingdom, this is what life with God is like. He said, it's like a man who went to a field and found the pearl in that field. Oh, sorry, he went to a market, found a pearl that was the best pearl he'd ever seen, and he went home and sold everything in order to get it. Or he said, a man that had found a treasure in a field, but in order to get the treasure, he had to buy the field. So it says he sold everything to get that field. He said, that's like the kingdom. What's it going to cost you? See, he never put an amount on it. He just said everything. If you're a millionaire, guess how much it costs you? $1 million. If you've got $10, guess how much it costs you? $10. If you own your own house, guess what it costs you? Your house. Whatever you've got, that's it. Everything. But you know, sometimes people can take that type of commitment and use it harshly. Can I just share something with you that's it's a delicate thing from the Bible, and I want to share it with you. So I want you to see if you can understand this. The process of a covenant in the Old Testament was brought into effect through a thing called circumcision. All right? Hopefully all the kids are out there, so I'm going to have to speak a little bit frankly. I never even realized what the word circumcision meant till I was actually looking it in the Bible. And Paul was talking about a group called who pushed the false circumcision against the new the true circumcision. See, in the new covenant, God doesn't want a physical circumcision. He says, I want to circumcise your heart. I want to come into your heart. And I never really stopped to think much about it. It's probably not something I want to really think about. But you know, the English word for circumcision actually means what it is. And I never stopped to think, what's circumcision? Well, it's made up of two words, circum, as in circumference, you know, circum, you go round, and scission is something you cut. So a circumcision is where you cut around the foreskin and remove that piece of flesh from the baby. Okay, it's got to be a process, you cut around and you remove. The Greek word is peritome, or peritome. Peri means perimeter, means around. Tome means to cut. It's exactly the same as the English, to cut around, to cut around. Paul said, beware of the legalistic people. He said, now in the English Bible, it will say the false circumcision. There is no word false in there. It's two types of circumcision. He says, I call it the katatome. Beware of the katatome who are not doing the peritome. Peri means to cut around and the removal. Kata means to chop and come down through. Kata is from top to bottom. It means thorough and forceful. So you add kata to words to add force to it. You know what I mean? If you want to take someone, I use one word, lambano, I give you something. To grab hold of it is kata lambano. Kata is forceful. Really get it. He said, these people don't do the circumcision. They do the butcher's knife version. They do the chainsaw circumcision. In other words, they take something which is a delicate operation and go in roughly. Butchers. God's promised that if you will give your life to Him, He will do it peritome, not like a butcher. Sometimes churches have taken the katatome approach. They use, you've got to give God your all as a club to belt people into submission and make them serve. You've got to give us your tithes because you've got to give everything. You've got to serve in the nursery because we've got, you know, you've promised to give God your all. That's katatome. It's forceful. It's using what He did, which He did give us all, and I'm giving Him my all. But they're using it like a club. And God's like, no, no, no. When I come to take your heart, I promise to do it with the precision of a surgeon and the care of someone who truly loves you. This is not a hard, give me everything because I'm a tyrant. It's open up your hands so we can work together to bring my life to you. But I cannot do it if you don't exchange. This is the thing, you know what I mean? We want the safety of holding on with the security, you know, with the blessing and the benefit of what God gives. We want the security to know that I've got my own rock. So we're going to sing a song, and I'm giving you opportunity to think about this, not just do it. And one of the things I've done, we've actually put the tables back a bit. I haven't put them at the front on purpose because I don't want it to be even you people seeing who's coming forward. I just want it to be when we're standing, giving you an opportunity to do this. What I've done is I've got two bowls here. I've got one for people that want to bring their old rock and exchange it for something a little bit more beautiful. It's this glass, I know. It's all illustrated. But I want you to think, but what I don't want you to do, I don't want anybody to go home with both. Because that's just not how it works. It's an exchange. It's not a, I'll keep my life and I'll get this nice new fresh one that he talked about at church. I'll keep hold of the directions in the car, but I'll just have God sit in the back seat and add his benefit. God says, if I'm getting in, I'm driving. What? No. You can be in my car, but you can't be holding the wheel. He said, I'll wait outside the car. If I'm in, I'm driving. It's just who I am. Because if I'm in, I'm going to drive you to the best places that you could ever imagine, but I must let me guide you there. You must release that. So I'm asking you to make a fresh choice, maybe, or maybe a first-time choice. I'm not sure. You know, you might have been in church for years, and suddenly this is a choice. I grew up in church. I sort of understood it, and I knew what I wanted, and you know, I was a part of it from 8 years of age, 7 years, 7 years of age. I was in church. There came a time in my life when I was 15, so 8 years there, and I sort of, you know, I was part of it, loved it. But one day I was walking to class at school after a lunchtime break. I'm walking and I hear God speak to me, not in a way that I could hear with my ears, but in a way that I heard inside. It was so audible, I would have thought, oh, has everyone heard that? But it was so clear. And he actually said this to me, when are you going to get fair dinkum? Proves God's Australian. He actually used the word fair dinkum to me. So I heard, when are you going to get fair dinkum? But I knew exactly what he meant. When are you going to give me your life so that you can take mine? You can be in church, but you can be holding your own life. And I was trying to do things my way, in the context of a Christian lifestyle, and it was not working. I was miserable. God was miserable. Just not working. And you know, it took me. Now that's why I'm not pressing for this. It took me 2 weeks to make that decision, because I knew that God was calling me to account, and I couldn't do it half-hearted or 90%. If I'm in, I'm in. If I'm in, I'm in. So impacted my life when I chose. I remember standing outside in the backyard, my hands shaking. Midnight, everyone else has gone to bed. I'd come home late from a basketball game I was involved in, and I went to turn the television on, and I was not going to watch, you know, Billy Graham, all right? And I got there, my hand, as God says, are you in or are you in? And I remember walking outside, putting my hands up and saying, I'm in. I'm in. It's got to be everything. That means my viewing choices. It means my lifestyle choices. It means who I am and what I do is yours. So impacted me. Now, that didn't mean that I was totally free from everything from that moment on without any challenges or about. You know, if you want the other side, talk to Christine, my wife. She can fill you in the journey part. But from that moment, I put on a new coat that was all or nothing. So I'm giving you that opportunity. A choice that will be relatively easy, but I will actually make it again. And I'll just take the opportunity to think about it again and refresh. But I want to give you that opportunity, maybe for the first time, maybe as a refresher, maybe it's something you've let slide and you know this needs to come to you. Maybe you need to take it home for a week and think about it. And I'm good with that, because don't make this under pressure. Do it because it's the right thing. And I'm going to leave this bowl and this other bowl here for a couple of weeks. And you can come in at any time over the next 2 weeks. But if you're ready to make that decision now, don't put it off. Don't think, oh, there's my out. No, you know what God's called you to. Nail your colors to the mast. Just do it. Take this home. Put it on your desk. Put it on your bedside table. Put it in your purse. And you say, I've made that choice.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast from Breakthrough Church. We hope it helps you in your life as a follower of Jesus. If you have any questions or would like someone to talk to or to pray with, we would love to hear from you. You can find all of our contact details at breakthrough.org.au. Have a great week.